in a greedy little world that teaches every little boy and girl to earn as much as they can possibly, then turn around and spend it foolishly. We created us a credit card mess. We spend the money that we don't possess. Our religion is to go and blow it all. So we're shopping every Sunday at the mall.
And a very good morning, listeners. Good morning and good morning indeed, and welcome to the Wednesday, December the 3rd, 2008 broadcast of Become Vocal Local, coming to you Monday through Friday right here on the Republic Broadcasting Network. We're on the web at www.republicbroadcasting.org and my little website, vocallocal.org, where I warehouse Plan B. If you haven't read Plan B yet, you might want to log on to vocallocal.org and read it. Check it out. My name is William Robertson. I've got good news, hard facts, and workable solutions for you today in the form of a history lesson. And if you can't remember the last time you experienced the pursuit of happiness, then you're in the right place at the right time to become vocal local. And definitely, I'm making great strides towards a much deeper understanding of this idea of the pursuit of happiness. I think when I'm ready to give it out and share it with you, you will be amazed at what was meant by that terminology. Anyway, today we'll go into Professor Carol Quigley, Tragedy and Hope, read a famous paragraph or two from his book, this great, huge, weighty tome that in itself is like a minor encyclopedia on American history. We'll look at Francois Guizot very briefly, go back and study some more out of this election concept from the encyclopedia, basically just continuing where we left off yesterday. And so I do welcome your calls, your comments, and your questions as they relate to the topics that we're discussing. It's 1-800-313-9443. And I encourage you to listen very closely, take notes, access our RBN show archives, download a copy of today's broadcast onto your hard drive or a CD. And for those without internet access, you can go directly to RBN by calling 1-800-724-2719. That's 1-800-724-2719 and request a studio quality copy of today's broadcast on CD. So again, the listener call-in line is 800-313-9443. You know, many people have referred to this particular paragraph or so that I'm going to read to you from Carol Quigley's Tragedy and Hope, and by no means and by no way have I read all of this book. It's been in my possession for quite some time, but it is a very weighty tome. And quite frankly, I look at it more from the index and go in and find things than sitting down and wading through this particular book. I have other writings by Carol Quigley that I've read in entirety, The History of Civilization and so on and so forth. But with this one, I use it more as a reference tool. But there is a couple of pretty often hit paragraphs, one in particular, which will be included in what I'm going to read to you now from that. But it's interesting because Carol Quigley, as intelligent a man as he was, seems to me to have been completely locked up in this concept of the left-right paradigm, unable to shake it either mentally or in his writings, and I think you'll see what I mean as we go through this. But here, let's start with this. It says, in these terms, the political struggle in the United States has shifted in two ways, or even three. This struggle, in the minds of the ill-informed, had always been viewed as a struggle between Republicans and Democrats at the ballot box in November. Wall Street, long ago, however, had seen that the real struggle was in the nominating conventions the preceding summer. And isn't that what we've been discussing here on Become Vocal Local, the things that we discovered as we moved through the Ron Paul Revolution process and as we began to attend our county caucuses and as we attended our county conventions? We'll find out more all about that on the other side with Carol Quigley. Stay with us.
Do Do you have more than $25,000 in credit card debt? Would you like to be out of debt in just 90 days using a system that has proven and guaranteed results for 15 years? I'm John Glia, the author of Winning the Collection Game and founder of Zero Debt in 90 Days. My system has helped tens of thousands of people that realized they had way too much credit card debt or just could not or did not want to continue paying credit card companies.
My wife was really skeptical, but she liked your written guarantees. I'm glad we went with the program. Thanks to your system, we've got a fresh start and are debt-free, and it only took a few months.
I have trained over 80 attorneys in at least 15 states on how to use my system and get their clients out of debt in 90 days. But you don't need an attorney to get the benefits of my proven system. In fact, you can keep your cash. No need to negotiate with creditors. No need to pay legal fees or make a federal case out of your situation. Call my team today at 321-747-0264 or visit johnglia.com and ask for free information on how you can be debt-free in 90 days without making one payment to any creditor. That's 321-747-0264 and johnglia.com.
The stock market is crazy. The chemtrails are spraying us with their chemicals. It's time to think about what is important. Most forget just how important life is. Life Change Tea removes toxins, chemicals, parasites, and bacteria that store up in your body. It cleanses you and gives you results in hours. And one of the wonderful side effects from this product is you lose weight. That's right, you lose weight. And on top of that, there's a 45-day money-back guarantee. So why wait? Call now. Operators are standing by. 928-308-0408. I'll say it again. 928-308-0408. Or order online at getthetea.com. That's getthetea.com. And remember, stock market may crash, but you don't have to go with it.
Howdy, gardeners. This is Mike from Baker Creek Heirloom Seed Company. We carry America's largest selection of heirloom seed, all non-hybrid, non-GMO, and non-Monsanto. We offer 1,200 varieties that our grandparents grew, vegetables that helped us survive the Great Depression, varieties that our founding fathers grew, and varieties that not only survive but thrive in today's gardens. All our vegetable seed is open-pollinated, which means you can save your own seed from generation to generation. Want to learn more about heirloom seeds and what the government is doing to control our food supply? If so, request our free 124-page seed catalog. And today, we offer you our Homestead Collection, 60 full-size packs of pure heirloom seed for $83 post-paid. That's 60 fresh packets of seed for just $83. Call us today to order your free catalog or our seed collection at 866-OLD-SEED. That's 866-OLD-SEED, or go online to oldseed.com. That's oldseed.com.
Yeah, once again, now this book, Tragedy and Hope, it has, let's see how many, somewhere in the neighborhood of 1,300. It's got 1,348 pages in it in the edition that I have. This was originally published back in 1966. I'm working on pages 1246, 1247, and 1248. But, you know, in 1966, things were considerably different than they were in 1946. They were different than in 1956. 76 was different as well. 66 was really the high point, if you will, in the free speech movement. There was a considerable upheaval on the campuses all across the country, not only just from the standpoint of the students coming into this age of illumination or enlightenment, if you will, but also from the standpoint of the instructors, as I've spoken before, where there were choices being made in curricula that were driving out some of the better minds. Carroll Quigley was one of those minds, but he was part of an insider. He was insider on the Council on Foreign Relations and other of these types of groups. So it's difficult when you read it to understand whether or not he's being on the level with you or whether he's just feeding you a bunch of smoke. But certainly for 1,350 pages worth, it would be difficult to maintain a charade. I think that most of this information is reasonably accurate and coming genuinely out of his mind. But Wall Street, he says, long ago, however, had seen that the real struggle was in the nominating conventions the preceding summer. We need to stop in there, and you don't like to do that, because when I read this material, because of the other readings that I've done, I see things in here that I feel are important, and so I try and share that with you as we go through it rather than just reading verbatim. But the influence of Wall Street on the political system has got to be taken in mind or kept in mind as we proceed through this, but also understanding the whole election process. Everything is being dictated, it seems, from that corrupt area in our country. I was in New York City in the summer of 1976. I had gone hitchhiked from Missouri after the spring hay was done and other chores were taken care of. I decided that I would go to New York City, visit with a friend of mine, a new professor, NYU professor, who had just begun teaching microbiology at NYU. But I went up there, I hitchhiked up there, and I wanted to go for the bicentennial. I wanted to see the tall ships. I'd never been to New York. I'd never seen the Statue of Liberty. And I thought it would make a really great summer for me, and it did. It was very interesting. But New York was a place that as soon as I could get myself onto a bus and out of there, and I had to get on a bus to get in there, the thought of trying to hitchhike into New York City, for anybody that's ever spent any time with a thumb in the air along the highway, I was warned and warned and warned and warned as I moved closer to the Northeast that I should abort my plan about hitchhiking into New York and instead go and find a bus terminal someplace and ride in on a Greyhound, which I did with sound advice. Anyway, New York is quite a place, and I think that if there was a Velcro fly that we could find someplace and we could tug that little Velcro strip and nudge New York out into the Atlantic Ocean someplace and then pull the drain plug, we might as a nation be better off. But, of course, there are lots of people that listen to this broadcast from New York, too, and I don't mean you any malice. It's just that there's something bad wrong with your town. Anyway, going into this further, he says, this realization was forced upon the petty bourgeois supporters of Republican candidates by their antipathy for Wilkie, Dewey, Eisenhower, and other Wall Street interventionists. Key phrase there, Wall Street interventionists. You know, we've had anti-Masonic parties, we've had anti-monopoly parties, and others for a long time, because many people realize this is a source of trouble, a trembling stone, if you will, a stumbling block in our system, and their inability to nominate their congressional favorites, like Senators Noland, Bricker, and Taft at the national conventions. And we saw in this past summer the difficulty we had getting anywhere close to nominating Dr. Ron Paul as a Republican candidate for president. Just as these disgruntled voters reached this conclusion with Taft's failure in 1952, the new wealth appeared in the political picture, sharing the petty bourgeoisie's suspicion of the East, big cities, Ivy League universities, foreigners, intellectuals, workers, and aristocrats. Okay, so you see right here in this time period, 1952, 7 years after the war, something like that, we have this new wealth coming on, and we're going to find out a little bit more about that right now. By 1964, the election, the major political issue in the country was the financial struggle behind the scenes between the old wealth, civilized and cultured in foundations, and the new wealth, virile and uninformed, arising from the flowing profits of government-dependent corporations in the Southwest and West. So when the colonies, back in the colonial period, when we were looking at things, we would recognize that there was a substantial amount of wealth in land and labor. And then they were kind of arrayed against, as parties and factions, against those that had tremendous capital seeking outlets in industry. This was the beginning of the Industrial Revolution. So in 1776, this was the makeup of the people, colonies north and south, those that were possessed of large land holdings and those that had capital seeking outlets in industry here in 1966, 200 years later approximately. Here we have a situation where we've got the old wealth, so to speak, civilized and cultured in foundations. That would be the foundations, their power and influence, a book by Renee Wurmser could be read there. And this new wealth, this virile and uninformed arising and from the flowing profits of government-dependent corporations in the Southwest and the West. And so we can see this military-industrial complex really coming into the fore. And, of course, here the Taft's failure in 1952, and, of course, that was the year that Eisenhower came in. And he gave the warnings about the military-industrial complex, too, on his way out, didn't he? So there's a dynamic here that was starting to shift. And notice also the way that Quigley talks about them basically being uninformed. This new wealth is virile, dynamic, if you will, but uninformed. In other words, people are able to get in the gravy train, in the flow of government financing, and reap great profits and build corporations, but they're generally reasonably uninformed people as far as the old school is concerned. They're not from that blue blood, aristocratic, Kerry, Hines, Kennedy East, which was an interesting place to visit. I hitchhiked through all of that too. And one thing about hitchhiking back in the 70s is that when you're dependent upon someone else's grace and mercy to provide transportation, and oftentimes they were seeking company, often on a longer ride. They were driving someplace, they were going somewhere, and they didn't mind having the company of a stranger. It really is a great opportunity to see the differences in the mental outlook on people all around the United States. I've been across all of the major highways in this country and through all of the states of the Union, with the exception of Hawaii, because it's precious difficult to hitchhike to Hawaii. Otherwise, I'd have gone there too. Anyway, there's a lot of difference in outlook, especially in the 70s, of people. Some of the most interesting people that I met in all of the travels around were the most dirt poor Negroes that you could ever imagine in the South. I would be walking along the road down in Alabama someplace or whatever, carrying my guitar box and my long hair a-flowing, and down a long driveway would come a youngster and invite me to come up for sup. And I'd go up there, and they would have some grandpa and a couple other kids, and we'd sit down and we'd play banjo and guitar until the early mornings, and I'd had a good meal and a comfortable place to sleep on the floor, and off I'd go again in the morning. So anyway, there are many different kinds of people that live in this country. At issue here, Quigley writes, was the whole future face of America. And this is the truth, and truth indeed. For the older wealth stood for values and aims close to the Western traditions of diversity, tolerance, human rights and values, freedom and the rest of it, while the newer wealth stood for the narrow and fear-racketed aims of petty bourgeois insecurity and egocentricity. And you can see the egocentricity in a lot of the new wealth in California and Washington State and other places. There's a lot of egocentricity in the new wealth. They don't have a really long culture history, and so a lot of times they're just fakers. You know, they're faking it. You know, they drive the Porsche or they have the BMW or the Mercedes, but they're kind of faking it. They don't really have a culture laying back behind their wealth. They've just kind of come stumbling into a considerable amount of do-re-mi. The nominal issues between them, such as that between internationalism and unilateral isolationism, well, we'll have to pick that up on the other side. I hear a break. Stay with us.
Hey, honey, I'm home.
I grabbed the newspaper on the way home. Look at all the news today.
The newspaper? Don't you know that all you're going to get in the newspaper is propaganda, twisted news, and false information?
Honey, this is a national newspaper. It has to be true.
Ha! Huh. For some reason, a majority of the population believe anything the mainstream media tells them. The newspaper does not give out the important attention on what's happening to this country and news that affects our daily lives. Say, does that newspaper mention anything about the North American Union?
No, not that I can see.
I didn't think so. You need to go to www.newswithviews.com, where truth is more important than political correctness. That's www.newswithviews.com. Hey, don't throw that away. We can use that in the birdcage.
Okay, move over. Let me start reading newswithviews.com.
The truth? Read all about it at newswithviews.com. Newswithviews.com, where reality shatters illusion.
The headlines are clear.
The worldwide economic collapse is here.
The military is being positioned for martial law.
The mark of the beast is at hand.
Governments are calling for a new world cashless economic system.
Having a long-term food solution is your only hope.
To stay free.
Now, Survivalist Seeds introduces their Escape the Beast Kit. 24 varieties of all-natural, non-genetically modified heirloom seeds.
For true patriots and homesteaders wanting food insurance.
That's over 5 pounds of rare historic seeds
for a penny per seed.
15,000 seeds that will feed a family healthy food for 7 years. Big John Lipscomb, host of Don't Tread on Me, is including an instructional DVD that will teach you how to earn big money selling the produce from his incredible heirloom seeds back to him, restaurants, and small delis.
Don't buy from copycats. Their fancy packaging is not free.
Order today before it's too late. SurvivalistSeeds.com.
That's SurvivalistSeeds.com.
A long-term food solution.
Do you have more than $25,000 in credit card debt? Would you like to be out of debt in just 90 days using a system that has proven and guaranteed results for 15 years? I'm John Glia, the author of Winning the Collection Game and founder of Zero Debt in 90 Days. My system has helped tens of thousands of people that realized they had way too much credit card debt or just could not or did not want to continue paying credit card companies.
My wife was really skeptical, but she liked your written guarantees. I'm glad we went with the program. Thanks to your system, we've got a fresh start and are debt-free, and it only took a few months.
I have trained over 80 attorneys in at least 15 states on how to use my system and get their clients out of debt in 90 days. But you don't need an attorney to get the benefits of my proven system. In fact, you can keep your cash. No need to negotiate with creditors. No need to pay legal fees or make a federal case out of your situation. Call my team today at 321-747-0264 or visit johngalea.com and ask for free information on how you can be debt-free in 90 days without making one payment to any creditor. That's 321-747-0264. And johnglia.com.
Again, back to Quigley here. He says these the nominal issues between them, again, that would be this petty bourgeois, the new wealth, the nouveau riche, and the Eastern establishment, the nominal issues between them, such as that between internationalism and unilateral isolationism. Now, parenthetically, he states, which its supporters preferred to rename nationalism. And we've spent several days going through nationalism, so by now we should be able to recognize the theory and the underpinnings of that. But this contradistinction, this distinction between internationalism and nationalism. Now, for all those of you out there that have any previous experience with the Illuminati, you know that they are globalists, they are internationalists. And let's just listen to the rest of this paragraph that Quigley wrote. "We're less fundamental than they seem, for the real issue was the control of the federal government's tremendous power to influence the future of America by spending of government funds." Remember when we went through the party organizational models, and we looked at the rational, efficient system, the Democratic Party and the Republican Party being basically Siamese twins under the heading of rational, efficient, much better understood when we realized that ultimately the purpose of those parties is not to advance ideological belief systems, but to gain the reins of power. And here we see that the gaining the reins of power was for the purpose of the securing control of the federal government's tremendous power to influence the future of America by the spending of government funds. So that's Euro-Keynesian. spending our way into prosperity. You know, it doesn't work in your household. It doesn't work in mine. But even in early as the 60s, the trend was to spend our money and stand in line, get in line, get your nose into that hog trough and get it down in there nice and deep and root in and fill your bellies off the public coffer. The petty bourgeois and the new wealth groups wanted to continue that spending into the industrial military complex, such as defense and space, while the older wealth and the non-bourgeois groups, these would be the internationalists, wanted to direct it towards social diversity and social amelioration for the aged and the young, for education, for social outcasts, and for protecting national resources for future uses. You can take the protecting natural resource for future use and just simply say Agenda 21. For education, we all know what happened with John Dewey, got involved with that. For social outcasts, that's the welfare state. The social amelioration for the aged and the young, from cradle to grave, and to direct that big, all of the government funding toward social diversity and the diversity culture. So there's a considerable distinction here, but we can't overlook the idea that the nouveau riche were looking at building this military-industrial complex. And these two factions working together are a powerful enemy for freedom and for peace and for liberty and our rights, because they don't go towards a good end, neither one. As they mature, it just becomes more and more of a communistic or totalitarian police state, which is what we basically have raised up around us. So since the 1960s, this has been the struggle. The Worldwide War I and Worldwide War II, there were other agendas happening behind, beneath, and below those efforts, that we certainly weren't making the world safe for democracy, or I guess that was Woodrow Wilson's phrase. The outcome of this struggle, going back to Quigley here, which still goes on, is one in which civilized people can afford to be optimistic, for the newer wealth is unbelievably ignorant and misinformed. This is the mindset between the old aristocrat and the nouveau riche, where they look down their nose, and of course Quigley, you know, where he's coming from at Georgetown and in the East, he's looking down his nose and considering people being unbelievably ignorant and misinformed as they build corporations and convert natural resources into things like airplanes and other things, lumber, plywood, boards, timber. In their growing concern, he writes, to control political nominations, they ignored the even greater need to win elections. This is a part of what Become Vocal Local is all about, trying to implore you to embrace the concept of political realism as opposed to going into the fantasy land. It's not just one thing to nominate someone, but you've got to win that election. They did not realize that the disintegration of the middle classes, chiefly from the abandonment of the middle class outlook, was creating an American electorate that would never elect any candidate the newer wealth would care to nominate. Are you with me? As part of this lack of vision, the new wealth and its petty bourgeois supporters ignored the well-established principle that a national candidate must have a national appeal, and that this is obtained best by a candidate close to the center. How much more in the center can you get than the two candidates that we had offered this time? Not a dime's worth of difference between them. We'll be back. Stay with us. This is Become Vocal Local, and your calls are welcome.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
Howdy, gardeners. This is Mike from Baker Creek Heirloom Seed Company. We carry America's largest selection of heirloom seed, all non-hybrid, non-GMO, and non-Monsanto. We offer 1,200 varieties that our grandparents grew, vegetables that helped us survive the Great Depression, varieties that our founding fathers grew, and varieties that not only survive but thrive in today's gardens. All our vegetable seed is open-pollinated, which means you can save your own seed from generation to generation. Want to learn more about heirloom seeds and what the government is doing to control our food supply? If so, request our free 124-page seed catalog. And today, we offer you our Homestead Collection, 60 full-size packs of pure heirloom seed for $83 postpaid. That's 60 fresh packets of seed for just $83. Call us today to order your free catalog or our seed collection at 866-OLD-SEED. That's 866-OLD-SEED, or go online to oldseed.com. That's oldseed.com.
Deep in the Brazilian rainforest of the Amazon grows the acai berry. Considered to be one of nature's most complete and healthy foods, the acai berry is loaded with antioxidants, amino acids, essential omegas, fibers, phytonutrients, and protein. A superfood? Yes. YourLivingFruit.com now brings the acai product, the timing, the company, the opportunity, and the cause to you. Some of the health benefits associated with the acai berry are increase in sustained energy, help with cholesterol management, improvement of digestive system, strengthening immune system, and more. Acai berry boasts 10 times the antioxidant benefits of grapes and twice that of blueberries. Are acai berry health benefits right for you? Is the opportunity right for you? Find out at YourLivingFruit.com. YourLivingFruit.com will show you the remarkable and continually documented health benefits of the acai berry. Visit yourlivingfruit.com. That's yourlivingfruit.com.
With recent international flight from the dollar, it's confusing. How to protect your wealth against this invisible loss of purchasing power? Let the Republic Trading Group help you see through the fog and deception of the fiat money masters. The fact is, gold is and always has been the only insurance against the erosion of your wealth. So put the power of gold to work for you and rest assured your purchasing power is secure. Buy your gold from the most dependable and reputable dealer, Republic Trading Group. Call today 1-800-691-7898 and let Robbie Noel help you see through the fog. When you support the Republic Trading Group, you're also supporting Republic Broadcasting Network. So visit our new and improved website today, republictradinggroup.net, for daily news and information from around the world. Don't be confused. Call Republic Trading Group today, 1-800-691-7898, and lock in the power of gold.
Going back quickly here, says that in American politics we have several parties included under the blanket words Democratic and Republican. And that's a very true statement. Listen, he says, in oversimplified terms, I have said that the Republicans were the party of the middle classes and the Democrats were the party of the fringes. How many people have been called fringe groups lately? Both of these were subdivided, each with a congressional and a national party wing. Now, throughout this past election cycle, we saw at the very rural southwestern Missouri county caucuses and congressional district conventions, and even at the state convention, again held in Branson this year in Missouri, a very trying to be something town, which isn't, trying to emulate some of the other capitals of sin cities that we have in various places, all full of show town. It's a show town, I guess you could say. Nevertheless, in these various caucuses and conventions, the rank and file Republicans were not championing or advocating the National Party's candidate, John McStain. Instead, they were looking at others. And yet, as Quigley has mentioned here, there are these two different or several parties within parties within parties. It's like the little Japanese dolls, the carvings that you can take the top portion of the torso off, and there's a smaller one inside of that, and a smaller one in that, a smaller one in that. They did the same sort of a thing with a little hammer and screwdriver system where you could unscrew the hammerhead, and then there was a screwdriver, and then you take that little screwdriver and screw that off. It's all brass, very careful machining, and then progressively tinier screwdrivers down until a jeweler screwdriver. This whole idea, systems within systems within systems, hidden underneath Democratic and Republican headings. So the Republican Congressional Party, he says here, represents localism, and we've spoken on localism and how we need to be very careful when we embrace that terminology and understand its history as well. Localism and pluralism are very much interlinked, was much farther to the right than the National Republican Party. So this, what do we mean when we say the Republican Congressional Party representing localism? That's those local voting precinct groups. That's those local county factions, if you will, and parties. And as such, they were closer, they were much farther to the right than the National Republican Party, and as such were closer to the petty bourgeois than to the upper middle class outlook. The Democratic Congressional Party was much more clearly of the fringes and minorities, and thus often further to the left. Now, when he's using left and right locked up in this paradigm, if we go back and understand our party organization models and we look at the extreme left of the continuum, there we find the social democracy system, the multi-party systems, strong in ideology, whereas on the ultra side, the far right side of that continuum is just basically strict, straight-up totalitarianism, despotism at its worst, perhaps. So he's saying that thus they're further to the left, the fringes and minorities, than the Democratic National Party. And as we've stated numerous times on this broadcast, the Republican Democratic National Committee, the Democratic National Committee and the Republican National Committee are such as to be Siamese twins, or Adam and Eve before they were cleaved down the center, according to certain legend. They're basically one and the same, a two-headed beast being financed by the same people, largely from Wall Street. The party machinery in each case was in congressional party control during the intervals between the quadrennial presidential elections. But in order to win these elections, each had to call into existence in presidential election years its shadowy national party. This meant that the Republicans had to appear to move to the left, closer to the center, while the Democrats had also to move from the fringes toward the center, usually by moving to the right. As a result, the national parties and their presidential candidates, with the Eastern establishment assiduously fostering the process behind the scenes, there's truth. With the Eastern establishment assiduously fostering the process behind the scenes, that's Wall Street and its ties to the Rothschilds and England, moved closer together and nearly met in the center with almost identical candidates and platforms. Although the process was concealed as much as possible by the revival of obsolescent or meaningless war cries and slogans. There's a lot of truth in this. As soon as the presidential election was over, the two national parties vanished, and party controls fell back into the hands of the congressional parties that would also be the state parties, leaving the newly elected president in a precarious position between the two congressional parties, neither of which was very close to the brief national coalition that had elected him. And if you listen to John Stettmiller's broadcast the other day that was being guest hosted by Ralph Winterode, then you got a full understanding of this new administrative government that has been created by Congress. And we can understand more why the charade of the national parties is only raised during the presidential time, and then it falls right back into the control of Congress and the congressional party systems. Which again, if you look at the things that John McCain advocated and the things that Barack Hussein has advocated, now we see them both coming back into the same position again, with John McCain advancing more controls on guns and Hussein championing this idea of these civilian corps and civilian groups all over the place. There isn't a dime worth of difference between them, folks. The chief problem, and here's the famous paragraph, the chief problem of American political life for a long time has been how to make the two congressional parties more national and international. Now, you can't make them more national and international, but more national then means to forget about the states. It becomes more federal. It'd be a closer tie there to make them more federal, but more national then seems to imply some kind of power in the states. And international then is more United Nations oriented, or more, to use a more proper term, more in line with the precepts of the Illuminati, who were always, from the beginning in 1775, 1776, Adam Weishaupt, they were always international in scope. Continuing, the argument that the two parties should represent opposed ideals and policies, one, perhaps, of the right and the other of the left, is a foolish idea acceptable only to doctrinaire and academic thinkers. So even to use the concepts of right and left here, according to Quigley, and I can only agree with him, is just nothing more than foolish ideas acceptable only to doctrinaires and academic thinkers. Instead, the two parties should be almost identical so that the American people can throw the rascals out. There's the famous quote. At any election, without leading to any profound or extensive shifts in policy, it's always the policy. Right after 9/11, listening on the international shortwave for days at a time, sometimes 18, 19 hours a day, just sitting there monitoring my shortwave, listening around the world in the first few days after 9/11, all over the world, the media was saying it's the problem with the United States of America is their foreign policy, foreign policy. Foreign policy, this unmitigated continuance of the support of a greater Israel and Israel as the center of the world and as the new capital of the planet Earth, and this idea of moving into this kind of almost a theocratic system where the chosen people, quote unquote, are going to be the rulers of the planet. This is all man-made stuff. This is the stuff of tyranny and despotism. It's also the very stuff of the Illuminists. Continuing, the policies that are vital and necessary for America are no longer subjects of significant disagreement, but are disputable only in detail of procedure, priority, or method. We must remain strong, Quigley writes, to continue to function as a great world power in cooperation with other powers. Avoid high-level war. Keep the economy moving without a significant slump. Help other countries to do the same. Provide the basic social necessities for all of our citizens. Open up opportunities for social shifts and those willing to work to achieve them. And defend the best basic Western outlook of diversity, pluralism, cooperation, and the rest of it, as already described. Now, as we move further into a Hussein presidency, if the Supreme Court decides that he can be given a pass for his Kenyan birthright if they decide that he is a natural-born citizen. We're going to go into pluralism on steroids. There are going to be so many little groups set up in your county, in your town, working in conjunction with FEMA, working in conjunction with NIMS, working in conjunction with your states, your state emergency directors, etc. There are going to be so many of them that it'll make our minds swim. I'm not a prophet. I'm just hearing things coming down the pike. Heard a very interesting broadcast last night, some new research coming out. I look forward to getting into that as well and sharing it with you. But these things, any national American party hoping to win a presidential election must accept. In other words, if you want to win, you must embrace the policy. Because if you do not embrace the policy, then the Eastern establishment will repel you. They'll keep you out with their flea comb system of the county committees and the state parties. They'll keep you out of the dialogue. They'll keep you out with their massive control over the media system. In order to run and be successful as a candidate, you have to be invited. You can't crash this party, folks. You can't crash this party. You'll be thrown out, escorted to the door, and left outside You have to be invited in, and then you have to be endorsed, and then you have to be financed. And then their established two-party political system has to support you at the local level to get you elected. These are essentials, which is why we must work within the two established political parties and why third-party candidacies are just something that makes you feel good. Go back on Vocal Local, read Plan B. These things any national American party hoping to win a presidential election again must accept, but either party in office becomes in time corrupt, tired, unenterprising, and vigorless. Then it should be possible to replace it every 4 years, if necessary, by the other party, which will be none of these things, but will still pursue, with new vigor, approximately the same basic policies. So, we just see that, you know, old lies, new lies for old, the same old, it's just going to keep right on going as long as we allow this two-party political system to continue to have a stranglehold on we, the people. We don't focus on symptoms here because the symptoms are being rolled out endlessly. If we, even with empathy, we can understand the position of the victims, but if we focus simply and solely on the victims, then once again, we're going to have an endless stream of victims inside of this system. If we rail against the politicians, once again we've made an error, because the politicians are only there because of their support and the complicity of the established party systems. The primary disease that so clearly besets this nation is the established two-party political system and the stranglehold it holds over we the people, and that needs to be our primary focus, more so now than ever. Because the move is on, the drive is on, history is beginning to repeat itself. We're moving right back into the early 1900s. We're heading for a depression. We're heading for world wars. And folks, we're going to have to be wise as a serpent and harmless as doves and move quickly and expertly and embed in these parties at the local level so that we can start blocking this globalist agenda as it transitions from global to local, which it is. Jumping back to Francois Guizot briefly, he says, no one has ever denied that the fundamental law of all election is this, that the electors should do what they desire and understand what they are doing. In practice, however, this is often forgiven or forgotten. It is forgotten when electors, meeting together but for a short space of time, are required to make choice of more than one or two people or issues. The great merit of election is that it should proceed from the elector, that on his part it is a true choice, an act of both of judgment and will. Beyond doubt, no extraneous will or judgment may in any case be rightfully imposed upon him, though he may always accept or reject that which is proposed to him. But this is not sufficient. The elector must be placed in such a position that his personal judgment, his own will, shall be not only free, but stimulated to display themselves in their actual character. Absolutely essential if we're going to have meaningful election. Their exercise must be met. Their exercise must be not only possible, but must not be too difficult. Now, this error has fallen into when instead of one or two names, a whole list of names is demanded, as in the great herd that was presented for the presidential preference primary. The elector almost always incapable of completing this list of himself and by the help of his own discernments falls under the domination or the dominion of combinations. Combination is a key word here. At the time of this writing in the early 1800s, combinations oftentimes implied a corporation or a standing committee, such as a political party, which he suffers rather than accepts. For he does not possess the knowledge necessary for judging correctly of their whole aim and effect. Who does not know that almost every elector in such a case cannot include in his list more than one or two names that are truly known to him and which he really desires? The choice of the remainder is made for him, and he writes them in confidence or out of complacence. Does that describe your behavior in the voting poll? I hate to admit that sometimes I fall into that gap. Generally, if I don't know the candidate, I won't vote for any candidate. And I make an effort to find out who these people are. And I try and read all about the issues, if there's a ballot issue on the ballot as well. But what we're talking about in here is that when elections become increasingly complex, when the lists grow and grow and grow and the issues grow and grow, then it becomes more and more difficult for an elector to rightly judge and discern. We'll be back. Stay with us right here on Become Vocal Local.
Worldwide economic collapse is here.
The military is being positioned for martial law.
The mark of the beast is at hand.
Governments are calling for a new world cashless economic system.
Having a long-term food solution is your only hope.
To stay free.
Now, Survivalist Seeds introduces their Escape the Beast Kit. 24 varieties of all-natural, non-genetically modified heirloom seeds.
For true patriots and homesteaders wanting food insurance.
That's over 5 pounds of rare historic seeds
for a penny per seed.
15,000 seeds that will feed a family healthy food for 7 years.
Big John Lipscomb, host of Don't Tread on Me, is including an instructional DVD that will teach you how to earn big money selling the produce from his incredible heirloom seeds back to him, restaurants, and small delis.
Don't buy from copycats. Their fancy packaging is not free.
Order today before it's too late. SurvivalistSeeds.com.
That's SurvivalistSeeds.com.
A long-term food solution.
Do you have more than $25,000 in credit card debt? Would you like to be out of debt in just 90 days using a system that has proven and guaranteed results for 15 years? I'm John Glia, the author of Winning the Collection Game and founder of Zero Debt in 90 Days. My system has helped tens of thousands of people that realized they had way too much credit card debt or just could not or did not want to continue paying credit card companies.
My wife was really skeptical, but she liked your written guarantees. I'm glad we went with the program. Thanks to your system, we've got a fresh start and are debt-free, and it only took a few months.
I have trained over 80 attorneys in at least 15 states on how to use my system and get their clients out of debt in 90 days. But you don't need an attorney to get the benefits of my proven system. In fact, you can keep your cash. No need to negotiate with creditors. No need to pay legal fees or make a federal case out of your situation. Call my team today at 321-747-0264 or visit johngalea.com and ask for free information on how you can be debt-free in 90 days without making one payment to any creditor. That's 321-747-0264. And johnglia.com.
It's true. Gold and silver have been a source of true wealth for years. In fact, people around the world have used these metals to buy and sell goods for over 5,000 years. And gold and silver will continue to be a source of true wealth for the foreseeable future. If you look back in history, you'll see that all fiat currencies have failed to maintain wealth or failed altogether. But gold has always protected its holder, a true asset, usable to anyone around the globe. As the value of your Federal Reserve note continues to depreciate, gold will be your only insurance. As an example, in 1975, you could buy a $40,000 home with 1,000 gold coins. Today, that same house is $400,000, yet you can still buy it with 1,000 gold coins. To find out more information on how to protect your wealth, call Republic Trading at 1-800-691-7898. That's 1-800-691-7898.
Last, shortest, and final segment of today's broadcast, and going back to Quizo, he says, and who makes this choice? The party to which the elector belongs. Now, party influence, like every other influence, is good only so far as it is exercised upon those who can form a just opinion of it and not submit to it blindly. The despotism of party spirit is no better than any other despotism, and all good legislation should tend to preserve citizens from its sway. into elections as into any other activity, levity, inconsiderateness, or passion may enter. But to these dispositions the law is not bound to show respect and afford facility. It should, on the contrary, strive to prevent their having any effect. And by the process of election itself, it should, as far as possible, secure to the citizen the exercise of his judgment as well as the independence of his will. It is not requisite to repel all influences or to declare them illegitimate beforehand. Every election is the result of influences, and it would be a folly to pretend to isolate the elector under the pretext of obtaining his unbiased opinion and desire. This would be to forget that man is reasonable and free as a being, and that reason is called to debate and liberty to choose. The soundness of election arises precisely from the conflict of the influences. The law must allow them to reach the elector and grant them up to the defenseless, and grant them up to all natural means of acting upon his judgment, but it ought not to deliver him up to the defenseless. It should take certain precautions against human weaknesses, and the most efficacious of these precautions will be to require nothing of the elector that he cannot perform with true spontaneity of action. The citizen being thus left to himself, all influences may act upon him. They may perhaps induce him to abandon the name that he loved for one with which he was previously unacquainted, but they will need at least to exert greater efforts to conquer his reason or to subdue his will. And we can continue and continue and continue. This is a wonderful book. If you don't have it in your library, you can go up to the Liberty Fund, Inc., I think it is, Liberty Fund, Inc., on the Internet. Google it, Scroogle it, Web Ferret it, Dogpile it, or run it in Mozilla and find them. But it's part of a series of books that are published by the Liberty Fund people. And it's called, again, The History of the Origins of Representative Government in France, written by Francois Guizot. That's G-U-I-Z-O-T, G-U-I-Z-O-T, Guizot. This whole idea of election is like a minefield for the people, and it is a long and almost sordid history. Certainly the parties mobilize forces and get people excited about politics where they might have no interest at all. But I think largely the disinterested apathy of political involvement comes from the media and from the parties. You've been listening to Become Vocal Local. We're taking it back one precinct, one county, and one state at a time. My name is William Roberts. I thank you for listening, and until the next time, good day.